This is episode 3, Bravo, of Free As in Freedom. Hi, I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
And this is Free As in Freedom. In this episode, I'm just going to sit back and let Bradley... No, just kidding.
We're going to hear another FOSDEM talk. One that I was wondering if we should bother to bring everyone. But it'd be nice for me to be able to complain about it.
I know. I think I'm mostly going to let you complain.
Well, it was interesting that the speaker begins, one of the speakers begins with asking whether I'm in the room, realizing I'm not, saying that they don't want to quote me.
Behind your back.
Without me being there, no, and then proceed to misquote me. Well, so that's how it'll start. Enjoy that one.
Okay, so the speakers are Amanda Brock and Simon Phipps, and they're speaking about App Store issues. Is there a title of the talk?
We could look up the title of the talk.
Well, it's not important. The topic is App Stores. So that's not really fair, because she does sort of say, oh, well, I was planning... I assumed Bradley would be in the room, and that was a fair assumption when she prepared herself, because you were one of the co-hosts.
Except that I told her right before they went on, which I was in the room, that I had to leave.
Oh, really?
Okay. And I said that I'm sorry, I'm going to have to miss your talk because I have to go to a meeting.
And then she asked if you were in the room?
That's correct. So enjoy that as a start.
That's interesting.
The title is actually, Should We Embrace App Stores?
Should we? Listen now, and we'll talk
no,
after.
No, we'll explain. We'll tell you what the real story is afterwards, and you can listen to what... Actually, there's some... listen for the questions. And I listened to this, and I think we're going to be able to fit... Obviously, Dan Lynch, our very busy producer, who is still recovering from Linux Outlaws Live as we record this, mm-hmm. is I think we'll be able to include the questions, because
yeah.
I think you're going to end up hearing all the questions. I was able to hear them fine.
It was a little hard for me to understand them, to follow them all, but I think they're worthwhile.
I think most of them will be in there.
I'm not as skeptical about... Well, okay. We'll talk after.
Not skeptical about... Okay.
We'll talk after.
Okay, so listen to this. I'm not going to tell you to enjoy.
You didn't say enjoy.
I don't think it's possible to enjoy this, but you can listen to it.
Okay, well, thanks for coming back to the Legal Issues and Policy Dev Room. To start our next segment, we have Amanda Brock and Simon Phipps.
So thanks everybody for having Simon and I here today. My name is Amanda Brock. You can probably guess which of us is which. I am a solicitor based in London, so a lawyer based in London. I've worked for Canonical for the last 5 years as general counsel, and I've just moved back into private practice in the last few weeks. And Simon and I talked a few months ago about coming here, and I said, let's talk about app stores, and he said, oh, are you sure you want to do that? I said, let's talk about app stores. And then foolishly, I let Simon submit the title. So should you contribute to app stores? Interesting question. Simon's going to talk about the should more than I am. But what I'm going to do is just set some of the scene, talk about some of the background, some of the legal issues. How many of you guys are lawyers? Okay, wow. I'm probably going to insult you by being too basic. Everybody else is a coder, a developer, and he's got no real reason to understand legal issues, right? Why would you be bored by them, other than things like App Store terms? So if I speak too quickly, which I tend to do, and if I do too much detail in sort of legal stuff and don't explain it clearly enough, wave at me, and I'll check which it is. The idea is that this is going to be a discussion group to get to the answer, should we contribute? So we'll speak each for probably 10 minutes, probably not more than that. Open it up to the floor. Unlike some of the sessions this morning, you don't have to ask questions. We're happy to have viewpoints, but we will probably try and keep people fairly short so that everybody can contribute. I've been doing this for quite a long time, and around 2000, I worked for an electrical retailer who was Europe's biggest electrical retailer at the time. And we had a website, and we flogged stuff on the website. So we sold hardware and we sold software and sent out disks to people. And when we sent out disks, someone would get it, they'd open the shrink wrap and they would have a license. And they came to me with this exciting digital download. We're going to sell the software and we're going to sell it online. And it was quite a long time ago. So we looked at our website and we had terms of use. Really simple, really basic. You want to work with us, you want to use our site, you want to participate. Here's how you work with us. Here's our terms of use. These are our terms of engagement. We sold stuff, so we had terms of sale. So when we added software, we did the equivalent of giving a shrink wrap license, and we simply made the software available on the terms of the license. It wasn't rocket science. It wasn't difficult. It was completely simple and logical, and that's what you needed to do. We amended our sales terms so that they said if you were buying software, because this stuff wasn't free, if you were buying software, it was subject to the license that the software was provided with. And there was no need to add anything anywhere that affected the license terms. So I'm going to say to you now, that's what App Store should be like, and sit down and just leave it and not talk about anything else. Except it hasn't been like that, and we're all aware of it. I think 2 years ago I saw lawyers talking at OSBC, good lawyers, getting really excited about app stores. And I was really concerned because it's important that there are many different means of distribution for open source, for software. It's important that there's ways for consumers who maybe wouldn't otherwise get it to access that for software, for that to become more freely distributed, widely distributed across a broader community. And at first I was surprised by the fact there were any issues, and then being part of Canonical, I also sat down and analysed the terms of all the different app stores to look at who was doing what and where the problems were. And I think there's sort of three or four problems that issues that we have to look at. And the first one is probably the best known one, which is if you're distributing FOSS software and it's on a copyleft license, it's a strong copyleft license, that can't be restricted by the App Store terms. You can't have extra conditions. Things like DRM just don't work with it. It's in conflict with the license. Now, if you were in the unusual position where you were the sole creator, so you were the sole holder of the copyright for that license, for that software that you then chose to license under a copyleft license, and you made it available on an App Store where there were additional conditions or incompatible conditions, there is only a problem if you choose to enforce that license. And I wrote something down this morning that Bradley said. I don't know if he's still in the room, so I'm not quoting him behind his back. I thought he was here. And he said, an unenforced copyleft license is the same as a permissive license. So if you're the sole owner of the copyright, you choose to put it on an app store, you choose not to enforce, in Bradley's mind, you've created a permissive license, not a copyleft one. But nobody can stop you doing that. You can choose to ignore, you can choose to leave your software up there in that way. Where you're going to have a problem is like VLC. Yeah.
What do you mean with permissive license?
So one that isn't copyleft, one where you don't have to give back in the same way, a less restrictive license. Where you do get a problem is if you've created a piece of software and there's more than one author. So the work belongs under copyright law to multiple people. One of those individuals can't choose to put the copyleft GPL type software on an app store without the others agreeing. You can do it, but your risk is that somebody else won't be happy with it and will enforce their rights under the license. And that's pretty much what happened in VLC, I think, where somebody was happy for it to be on the Apple App Store despite the additional conditions. Another author wasn't happy. So you've got a difference between being the sole author and having multiple authors. And of course, there's going to be more authors than one in most cases. And I think that's probably the most common problem that people have dealt with already with app stores. Simon will be more controversial than me and talk about Microsoft. But actually, I think Microsoft's terms have been amended recently to put carve-outs into them. So it looks like the Microsoft App Store actually allows you to have copyleft. So where there were restrictions, where there are restrictions in the terms, they've said, but these don't apply to FOSS. Ruth, are you disturbing my session?
No, I was actually trying to look something up for you.
Oh, thank you. Do you want to pass it quickly? So no doubt when we get back to the discussion, we'll definitely talk about this copyleft issue. I see two or three other problems. One is contributions back. So if you're running a website, you want to make sure that you're not responsible for user content and that the person who gives you that content says the content's okay. You know, it's, be careful how I say this. So it's not something that's in poor taste. It's not something that's illegal. It's not something that infringes somebody else's IP. So it's pretty standard for any app store, any website to say to you that you guarantee that. You've got a bit of a problem if you're contributing FOSS software because it comes without warranty. So it's not going to match the terms that you normally distribute. And that's something that we kind of have to work out a bit more afield. One of the reasons that the sites put that on there is something called Safe Harbor. So in the US, it's DMCA. In Europe, it's under the e-commerce directive. But if you're running a site like that and you say that you don't monitor, you don't check, then you have no liability. And if someone comes to you and says that's illegal, you go through a takedown process, you take it down, you let the people who are disagreeing fight it out amongst themselves. And if you get to a resolution, you can put it back up. If not, you sort of leave it to move on. But that means that you're not responsible for the content. You're not like an editor of a newspaper. And that's why you see this on sites. But that doesn't entirely sit with what we do, because we don't guarantee the IP and the code that we're giving people. So that's a bit of a problem too. And the other thing that I'm sort of aware of as being an issue, but should be really easily sorted out practically, is the offer for the code, because a lot of this is distributed in binary form, and there has to be some infrastructure in there somewhere to allow for the source to be distributed, whether that's a contact, a link, however it's done, repository that's got the source on it. Now, I think those, to my mind, are the main legal issues that we have to deal with around app stores. Whether you should contribute to app stores and have your software distributed in that way sort of depends on how you feel on those issues, who owns the copyright and the software that you're providing. And it's a sort of more of a social issue almost, I think.
Yeah.
Which is why Simon's going to talk about it and not me.
So, hello. Thank you for coming along. I'm Simon Phipps. I'm involved with OSI at the moment. I take an interest in app stores as a matter of dealing with growing software freedom in the world. The approach I've always taken to software freedom is that when somebody is encountering it for the first time, their first step will probably not be their entire journey. So when somebody who's running a Windows system encounters Firefox, they are taking a first step into an encounter with software freedom. And each individual is taking a journey which has reached a line somewhere, and that line is gradually pushed back further and further as people's encounter with the benefits that they get from having their freedoms made secure are made more obvious. So now I look at the world of app stores, and I believe that app stores are going to become a dominant form of distribution in commercial software. There are a number of reasons for that. The main reason is a sociological reason. It is because many businesses operate by using natural control points as the place that they monetize, but the internet doesn't have any natural control points, and so there is no place that most businesses can think of to go monetize on the internet if the internet is left to operate as it should. And consequently, businesses look at app stores as a way to create an apparently natural control point where they can perform their monetization. Now, the difficulty with that is that when you come into thinking about the distribution of software with the view that it's going to be a control point, you begin to think about applying terms that concrete your control. And so the app stores we've seen so far have typically been created with terms, I believe, by business minds that are not terribly familiar with the idea of software freedom. And I believe that largely unintentionally, the first time around the loop, those App Store terms were framed in such a way that they would be incompatible with any kind of copyleft license, particularly with project-level copyleft licenses. That's copyleft licenses like the GPL that want all of the source code for a complete shipped binary to be made available. But the App Store terms are also not terribly helpful for file-level copyleft licensing as well. They put non-technical business issues in the way of developers achieving their technical goals. So on that first round, I don't really believe the intent of very many of the app stores was to cause a problem with people's software freedom. because I don't think any of the people who created those app stores had any regard whatsoever for software freedom. And consequently, it was collateral damage when they harmed the use of free software in any of those environments. Now, the different app stores have responded differently to having it pointed out to them that their terms don't work with software freedom. So Apple have modified their app store terms. Their app store terms now explicitly prohibit you from shipping GPL licensed software on the Apple App Store. And that makes it much easier to work out what you're going to do up there. Because actually, if you accept their App Store developer terms, there is a clause that says that you can't ship GPL. They actually specify prohibited licenses. And guess which licenses are. Actually, they specify authorized licenses. Yeah, yeah, and then for clarity, they point out that the GPL is not an authorized license.
But they moved massively. In the old days, a while ago, you used to have to actually send a letter in that had your lawyer's details on it so that they could serve you. Otherwise, you couldn't put anything on the App Store. So that's progressive.
Google appears to be in a world where they would really, really like to be friendly towards free software, but they're also a bit worried about safe harbor and consequently are adding terms that appear to conflict with free software.
It's probably worth just explaining that again. So the safe harbor, if you monitor and check, you can't benefit from the safe harbor, so you then take responsibility for the content that goes out there, and that's where the problems arise.
How does that work with App Store, where they are checking the app for uploading? That's generally part of the process.
Well, you've got a problem.
They can't, and that's why their terms are so intrusive. Well, is because
I'm going to disagree with you slightly. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, that's why we're both.
To be controversial.
That's why we're both here.
You either, if you start to check it, you're responsible. So you either don't do it, in my mind, or you do it and take responsibility. There is a sort of get out of jail card that some people try to use, which is that they then add to their developer terms that the developer is responsible, so they try and pass the buck. But, you know, a big company, why would they sue a developer? It just doesn't make sense. So you either really check or you don't check, in my view.
You just mentioned that the Apple App Store explicitly disallowed the use of GPL. And I read the terms of service recently, and I did not find the term GPL.
No, it does and the opposite.
I also found the WordPress app recently, which was completely developed by WordPress Incorporated, and that's GPL2, which is, they got an easy option for that because they own the entire copyright to the app. But I didn't see any term from Apple which explicitly disallows the GPL or any other copyleft license. There are other terms which prohibit that, like terms of use and this kind of stuff, but there's no explicit disallowance.
I agree with you. Right.
Let me just see what I clip.
But I think what it does is it said that we don't accept software on the... We do accept open source software, and then it has a list of licenses that they like.
No, I did not see that.
No.
I think
no.
We do.
What I've seen is only a single limitation left, which is about terms of use, because Apple tells you, hey, you can use whatever app for commercial if you're a company, and for private use if you're not a company. So what they don't actively allow is use of apps for education or government agencies or non-profit organizations.
I think
so they're limiting the use of the apps.
And I think more of the problem comes around the clauses that talk about 10 devices and 5.
These terms are gone since like 3
months. No, they're still there. I read them Thursday night, they're still there.
Really?
Yeah.
They
might not be there today, but they were there on Thursday night.
So let's move on past here, because the point that I want to make is I actually think that the app stores are gradually going to get to the point where they have not got a problem. I think we're going to eventually realize that actually the business units don't want to prohibit free software in the app stores, because why would they want to do that? That actually what's happening is this is residual caution from legal departments that are trying to achieve other goals, and the language that they're using to do those other goals has got the collateral consequence of harming the presence of free software in there. So I think they're going to fix it. The example that I was going to cite was the Microsoft Windows Phone App Store, which has got some wonderful terms to it that I think I've got here. They have a term in there that says that your license terms must not conflict with Microsoft's standard license terms in any way, except that if your application includes free or open source software, your license terms may conflict with the limitations in any way, but only to the extent required by the license that the free and open source software uses.
It is actually a lawyer's dream. It is the perfect solution. Because so, instead of trying to have two sets of terms, you know, one that works with proprietary, one that works with free, you end up with the terms that you want, and then if open source free software overrides it, it wins. It's perfect.
Yeah. So I think the sort of clause that Microsoft have put in their Windows Phone agreement will eventually show up in other app stores as well, where basically what they'll say is, look, we don't intend to conflict. Okay, so this clause says that if you find a conflict, you can ignore it because the open source license takes precedence. So let's assume they're all going to fix it. So the next question is, well, should we be putting free software in proprietary app stores? Should we be trying to put GPL licensed software in the Apple iOS app store? Should we be putting free software on the Windows Phone app store? Now, I'd like to suggest to you that it's imperative that we do that. It's imperative that we're putting free software into proprietary app stores, because certainly in my worldview, reaching software freedom is an incremental journey. And if we never allow people to take the first step on that journey, then we are increasingly making software freedom something which is a geek-only privilege, rather than which is a universal right. And that's not something that I want to see happen. So I think it's imperative that we put software into app stores. Now, actually, there's a lot of free software in app stores already. Who was it that did the survey? It was OpenLogic did the survey. OpenLogic has done a survey. They've taken a sample of apps out of the Apple App Store, and they have been able to analyze with their tools what code has gone to make the app. And they've discovered that over half of the apps that they surveyed have got free software components in them. There's software freedom is being used by developers in app stores. But because of the terms of use, and because of possibly because of community opprobrium, they would rather not mention it. They would rather keep the freedom to themselves and not extend it to the end user, because it's surfacing and extending the software freedom to the end user could cause a problem. So I believe we have to, as a community, take two steps. I think we do have to apply pressure on app stores to fix all the problems, and Amanda assures me there is absolutely no reason why an app store should not be friendly to free and open source software. But the second step I think we have to take is we have to make a conscious effort to surface the software freedom in the apps that we're putting out. Make it clear that the source is available. Make it clear that contributions are sought. Make it clear that a community exists in the apps that we're creating, rather than take the step that most of us are taking as developers at the moment, which is to enjoy software freedom ourselves, use components in our apps, but try and keep our heads low and not get into too much trouble with either the App Store or the community for doing so. So that was the comments that we have prepared. Amanda would like to assert that it's entirely possible to have a FOSS-friendly App Store. I would like to assert that it's imperative that we go put FOSS into App Stores. And I'd now love to hear your experiences, particularly if there's folks from places like VLC in the audience.
My question probably is a good place to start off, and maybe for people who are less engaged in the issues, you could explain what the conflict is between the App Store terms of the conditions and, say, the GPL2, assuming you make your source available.
Yeah. So in the most sort of basic level, I guess, you can stand up at the same time. I think anything happens.
Makes it cooler.
Okay. sort of the most basic terms, or the most basic way of putting it, I think, is that you do two things having these contradictory terms. One is you add extra conditions, which you have problems doing. The other is you restrict the distribution, which you can't do. I think it's section 6 of GPL. So when you restrict on the Apple Store to a number of devices, that's directly, if I can say it, contradictory to the terms of the GPL. Then with the copyleft and the contribution back, there's another term in Apple's agreement, which says that you grant them a license, and then it has license terms for the grant, as opposed to the grant back being under the GPL, which it needs to be. Andrew, you're looking at me as if I'm getting it wrong. Is there something you want to add?
Sense. I've got a different question.
Have I answered that enough?
You have partially. Let me just clarify a little bit. So if so, the app store says you can only make 10 copies of, yeah. of the yeah. software, and if the end user violates that, I mean, is that you're not putting that? If I'm putting yeah. the software in the store, I'm not setting that 10 yeah. limit. That's Apple or Microsoft
exactly.
setting that limit. So
if
they're
you
violating
the copyright,
the license.
You've got all the rights, and that's fine. But if you've got a co-contributor mm-hmm. and the software is up there under the copyleft license, then Apple restricts it. And I can't imagine they'd ever enforce it, but maybe one of your co-contributors wants to enforce it. So is there anybody from VLC or who's involved in VLC?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yes, I can talk about
it. I hope you notice how neatly I deflected
that.
Yes,
I can say that I disagree with you on many points.
I'm sure you do.
So VLC, we have around 140 million users on the desktop, which means that's one of the largest open source applications. And we have a version of VLC working on iOS, on Android, and lately on Windows Phone and Windows Store. So we have had the issue in the past that one company ported VLC on iOS and put it there, and once someone was not happy and complained. There are lots of behind talks. The reason why he made it down was based on an analysis that was completely outdated. Because what I did not hear saying, and to me that's one of the biggest issues, is that those items change every week. Every week. I have a download, wget, all those terms, and they change all the time. However,
and you know when you go onto your phone, if you use an Apple phone, that they ask you to accept them every time they change. They do notify you, and they offer
yes,
to send it to your email.
Yes, not exact. They do it way more often. Sometimes it's very, very slight stuff. But the date at the bottom of the iPod iTunes term of service is completely wrong. So that's something that really is annoying. However, they have progressed a lot. It used to be at the beginning that their license was added on top of it, and this is gone. They used to add the 5 device limitation, which is not a 10 device limitation, in the usage rule part. This is gone.
Say that again?
So they used to have a 5 device limitation on apps and in the usage rules, so you couldn't use your application on less or more than 5 devices.
They have, as of Thursday, it says 10,
no.
and it's 5 iOS. Honestly, I pulled them down and read them on Thursday. So
yes,
it's 5 iOS approved devices or 10 devices in total.
No, you're not listening to what I'm saying.
Okay, then I'm not understanding. I'm listening, I might not be understanding.
So there is a limitation of 10 association device per iTunes account that
yeah.
will auto-synchronize.
Yeah.
But this is just a limitation on synchronization. There used to be another limitation that people, and this is the one that we care about, which is the limitation of usage, meaning that the limitation now is on synchronization on 10 devices, but you could use it on more than 10 devices. You couldn't do that in the past because there was a limitation that said that you couldn't use it on more than 5 devices. In the usage rules, this limitation is gone. And there were also a few terms that were you may not and now are you shall, and stuff like that. And when you ask Apple, they say, no, it's fine. Then you say, yeah, so please clarify. Oh, no, clarification is difficult. I've done analysis of those terms every 6 months on a mailing list, and every time I've been mailing them to Apple. And, of course, there is no answer. But 2 or 3 weeks after, it changes in the right way. So it's going to the right places.
Yeah.
It's still not GPL compatible for me.
Can we sort of talk about two things there? So if you ask a lawyer to write a clarification, it means that what's written down in the first place isn't clear. So that's a problem. And they either have to change it to make it clear. You know, if you've got FAQs on legal things, it's not a great thing necessarily. What I'm really interested in is what happened with VLC when Apple took the software down.
So basically,
can you talk a bit about that?
That's something I really hate about those bastards.
But yeah,
at this point in time, we disclaim all liability to you.
Identify who the bad guy is there.
The bad guys are all those app stores people. And
okay,
all of them.
That's it.
And that's not only targeted at Apple. Because at the same time, they say, oh, we are just like a market share and we are not redistributing anything. And so if there is a complaint, it's going from the people complaining directly to the developer. But they are adding stuff. So what happened, someone complained, and it was just a normal DMCA, a classic DMCA. And Apple said, oh, this is not our problem, and forwarded it to the developer. And the developer was this company that put it on the app store.
The safe harbor.
Yes, but at the same time, if they are just distributors, then shouldn't they like actually have no rules? They add rules. So if they add rules and repackage the application, they are distributor. I'm sorry. There is something also interesting that is not known, is that if your application price is zero, now there is no DRM added on App Store, on the Apple App Store. This is not set anywhere.
No, it's not.
But you can know that. It's different from the Google app, Google Play, or whatever the name those days. They change also that every 3 weeks. Where you put free, you can say explicitly that you don't want DRMs. The Android one is way more simpler, but I think there is still the safe harbor issue. However, we still distribute DLC on the GPLv3 on the Google Android App Store. GPLv3, of course, because you need, if you do any application on Android, you need to link to Apache v2, which makes any GPLv2 application directly GPLv3. But so far, when you talk with people from Google, because we are in the position where we talk a lot to those guys, because I don't know, they care. They say no. We want this to be GPL compatible, and that's at least what Google said. Microsoft is different, and I disagree with you, Sam. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is not compatible with GPLv3. I think.
They don't. If that's the case, then that clause 4D that I read out doesn't seem to make any exception that says that there are particular OSI licenses that to which it doesn't apply.
Why do you believe they're not compatible?
I believe that there is an issue with DRMs on that. And I have not been able to clarify this part with Microsoft. I've not been able to clarify if you can do an application on this App Store without DRM.
Right.
I will meet Microsoft in 2 weeks, and maybe I will have
be
better
interesting.
News.
I don't know if you can share somehow that feedback, because it would be interesting.
Sure, we will. And then about Microsoft, exactly when we talked with them, they said, yes, we want this to be GPLv2 compatible, but as long as nothing from Microsoft needs to change license.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's in the Apple Developer Agreement, not the iTunes Term of Service, where it speaks about FOSS. It says, it explains about GPL and LGPL under the theme of FOSS. And under the last Apple developer agreement, it just says that if you have FOSS, you need to make sure that you're compliant correctly and that you will not force anything from Apple to be open source.
But the problem with that is that might be what you contribute under as a developer, but then it's redistributed or provided or made available under their terms of usage, and if those contradict, then you're still going to have that, because it doesn't have the kind of carve-out that Microsoft has.
Yes, but then before you then said two different things, and one is developer agreement and one is iTunes.
Yeah.
And the 10 association limitation is only for automatic synchronization for the iTunes term of conditions.
I read it again,
but
that's not what it said in the version I drew down.
But we can discuss about that for a long time, and we're going to meet Apple soon again about that. So I have to say that there is one App Store that you've not spoken about, and it's Intel App Store.
Do you know what? There are hundreds.
Yes.
And I'm probably going to draw you to a close unless you've got a really different point, because there are other people I think want to contribute.
Sorry, I just finish on that.
Okay.
If you submit an application, it asks you if it's open source or not.
Yeah.
And then it forces you to upload the source code. And if you upload a fake tuple, it tells, haha, no way, this is not the tuple for your binary. That's interesting.
But Canonical has one too. We went through the same sort of questions and issues when we were setting it up.
I was wondering about that. You talk about the Google and the Apple app tools.
Yeah.
And you work with Canonical.
Yeah.
How do you guys do that?
So what we did was we looked, there's only so much I can obviously say because I no longer work at Canonical. and there are people in the room who may know more about it than me who are from Canonical. What we did was we looked at all the different sort of web app stores that we thought were state of the art, and we looked at the terms and what we thought caused problems and didn't. And whether we've achieved it or not, we tried to create terms that didn't do that. Because what Canonical's done is it doesn't create a separate app store, it used its software center, and the software center was always used for add-ons to Ubuntu anyway. And I think they've done it very nicely, and they've tried to split up the core pieces of Ubuntu, the free software, and the paid for software, because they're obviously distributing a mixture. And if you guys hate the terms, you can tell me you hate them. I don't know if they've changed since I left, but certainly when we did them, we tried to make them fair and balanced and not put a lot of liability on the developers. But there are dozens of app stores that you could talk about in that sort of scale, if not hundreds. Chap at the back?
So I had a question. How does this all relate to the GPLv3's requirement for the user to be able to install the modified version, which is often a bit of a problem for tablet-style devices?
I'm going to make that technical, not a legal question, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so that's a great point for debate. I actually don't want to go down the line of that argument, because the question that I want to ask one of the previous speakers, which I might also want to ask you, is to say, well, so why would we want to debate this? If we can get software into the hands of end users, and we can engage them in communities where they can develop the software, and they can make changes to the software and install it on a suitable device, such as a Cyanogen mod unlocked phone, why are we so concerned about preventing end users from having free software because of technical incompatibilities with the terms of the App Store? What is it that makes us want to prevent those users getting the experience of free software?
I'm sorry, but I take offense at your terminology.
The experience of free software includes the ability to write a modified version if you choose to do so.
Absolutely.
And giving a user some software that was free for somebody else at some other time maybe, might be an improvement for that user, but it's not giving that user software free.
So I'm going to be a bit dumb here on the technical front. Can't you just contribute the modified versions in another app?
So the point is that we can go down that argument. I can probably find some reasons why you can use the modified software. For example, you can contribute it to the App Store yourself as a second app, which you install through the App Store. Or you can decide to use the software that you've modified on the same device but on an unlocked operating system. Or there are probably ways that we can interpret the environment that we are looking at that give latitude to believe that the terms of the license are being obeyed, and there are probably ways that we can look at the environment and find fault with it, and find ever-increasing nested layers of fault. My suggestion is that following that path of confrontation is actually doing less to advance software freedom than putting free software into the hands of users who can then modify it and find a venue in which they can use it.
Before we pick up more on that, Simon, this gentleman here, I think, wanted to pick up on the other comment, or did you get you're okay? And this one back as well.
Well, I think, Simon, you gave some examples where some devices that exist or have existed have had situations like this. For instance, in Symbian, they had a very strict security framework, which was not for DRM, but purely for just security purposes, which was completely problematic for GPL3 purposes. And then you end up, if you want to have a solution, you can say that, maybe you need to sign up somewhere, you need to get your own key, but it's possible for anyone to get their own key. Maybe it costs like $10 or something, but it's available for everyone. And then I would agree with you that, we can have these situations where we could say that, this is kind of free for everyone. Then you can also create devices where you can't install another operating system and you don't have any ability to do any of these things. And then I think some soft confrontation is probably quite in order.
There's definitely some confrontation that's necessary with looking, for example, at app stores that are actively trying to prevent there being free software in the store. With intentional terms, but I feel that to change that, you need to have a beachhead. You need to be a part of their community, so that you have standing to go to them and ask them to fix things, and that yelling at app stores from the outside and not actually having any standing within them is not the way to make software freedom be advanced through those places.
I think the VLC guys here, they are in an excellent position and they are leveraging it. seems quite nicely that, you know, all the mobile phones, of course, want to have this app in their app store, and you know, keep on the good work.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you will get a lot of them.
And share that information with us as you develop more with the providers. Was there any other topics, questions? Till didn't ask us a clever question.
One question.
I'm not clever, so it won't help.
What's your position about antitrust law and unfair competition law? Could that be a tool? Because if I exclude software from my app store, and this is the only or the necessary way for distribution, seems to me.
Are you excluding it? It's only excluded if it is a breach of the license terms potentially, but you're only excluding it if somebody enforces it. And if it's only been enforced a couple of times, then is that really excluding it when 41% of the software on the app stores is open source? Be interesting to, I think you could run an argument, but is any antitrust question?
So my non-expert view is that I don't think antitrust law is a terribly useful vector, because actually following, as long as you're dealing with a company that actually is already scared of antitrust action, then maybe you can get somewhere with it as leverage. But the current political environment doesn't suggest to me that big corporations are very worried about new antitrust actions, because I don't think there's the political will in certainly in the US, and I'm not sure there is in Europe either, to embark on new antitrust actions. So I think there is a potential to leverage antitrust law, but I think that there are longer levers that you can stand in better places to use.
There's a question here, I think.
Yeah, one quick comment and question that you may not want to answer.
That's for Amanda then.
Just thinking that, thanks very much.
You mentioned exceptional situations where there is only one copyright holder that may, you know, abandon their own license on uploading it to the App Store. But I don't know if that's worth actually breaking out into its own category, because that seems like it would be an exceedingly rare situation, especially unless all your dependent libraries are LGTL'd.
I used it almost as a way for people, I assume everybody in this room really understands copyright, but sometimes people don't, and they don't understand that the license means that you still hold the copyright, even when you grant a license. So, you know, in theory you could, but the likelihood of it is so slim, I just don't see it happening.
And the question was, do you believe, and how would you go about complying with the AGPL3 in an app store?
I'm not sure that in the case of an app store, the AGPL3 is a lot different to the GPLv3, because there's no online context you're talking about. The software is actually being run locally, so it's when you're running software AGPL software locally, it's effectively GPL software.
There's another question here.
Just to adopt some sort of Fixian terminology. So the idea of the of the app store being a control point, I mean, that's really what concerns me, and I think sort of echoed in some of the other comments that we've had already. Because even if you get a very friendly app store that's very friendly to free software, and allows, and there's some mechanism by which the code is available, there's some mechanism by which that code can be passed upstream and incorporated back into the app that you can then download again. It's going to be the app store that they're going to want to continue to maintain control, because there are other things that they're not going, you know, the idea of software freedom is you can use the software for any purpose, even if that's a particularly an evil purpose, a purpose that's contrary to the interests of the app store owner. So it may be that, you know, VLC, for example, doesn't have its the ability to have DCSS in it, but it might make it very easy to be able to download a component to do that, and Apple might say no, there's a policy reason why we won't allow that to happen. So it's another way of restricting the freedom in to that extent.
Wouldn't you contribute the modification back to the project? The project would update the software on the App Store, and then the user would get an update through iTunes.
Well, what I'm saying is that the App Store may say that's against their policies.
Yeah.
And so they're exercising into it. It's a form of TVization. That still remains a concern for me.
Yeah.
But changing the subject slightly, one thing that's very interesting, having on the Microsoft App Store. The idea that there's something explicit in there that says that the free software license overrides the Microsoft license. Now, I'm not a great fan of license proliferation, but isn't this an opportunity to write a really extreme free software license that basically says you can decompile any Microsoft software?
All you have to do is get OSI to approve it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know anyone at OSI that might approve the license
software? So fortunately, OSI has a process that prevents license proliferation these days, because we're approving very few licenses these days. And we discourage the submission of licenses, and if that are duplicative or not open source definition compliant. And I actually saw that Microsoft term as a vote of confidence in our in OSI's role in preventing new licenses getting approved. I don't think they would have put that clause in 5 years ago, because I think they would have seen OSI as an easy way to get very broad terms approved, and we don't do that anymore. So no, there isn't any amount you can pay me to get your license approved, Andrew.
So we're getting towards the end. Yeah, we're getting towards the end.
Succession at OSI.
Working on that. there's going to be a great question out here.
So two weak comments. I don't think the answer that you should go through the App Store again to install a modified version is a good answer, because well, common test for license freedom, for instance, in Debian, is that the political dissident should be able to install locally its modified application. So if we approach politically the people running the App Store, and I think, of course, at OSI or other organizations similar to OSI, if we approach them, I think we should demand that people have the freedom to locally install modified application without having to go through the App Store again. And the second comment is that I think there is also an opportunity in embracing App Store to answer the question of the title of this session, which is another urgent debate we need to have is the sustainability of development of free software by nonprofits and by individuals. And the opportunity we have in App Stores is via some funding mechanism that can go directly to developers.
Yes.
So this is something which is very easy to do, is much more easier for users than anything else we have on the net. Of course, the big question is which kind of tax the owner of the App Store will demand people. But this is, I think, a room for opportunity, and we should think about it as well.
I agree with that. So I don't know if everyone heard that comment, that's a shrewd comment, that putting your apps into App Stores results in generating revenue for the community that the app is from. One of the difficulties with that is I don't know of any app stores that offer optional payment.
What
you really want to be able to do is to put an app into an app store and say that this app costs any amount that you wish, and we suggest $10, but zero is fine. And in that sort of arrangement, I could see that. I would love to see that in F-Droid, by the way. I would love to see F-Droid gain the ability for me to make a payment when I get software from it.
But which user uses F-Droid? Come on.
Yes.
But we're at a Boston conference. Come on.
So it's actually very feasible for F-Droid to get more usage, because Amazon has been able to put their App Store on many people's Android phones simply by offering a better business proposition. And there is every possibility we could get a free software App Store available for Android, in particular, where you can install anything you want to. So I actually don't think it's as ridiculous as it sounds.
The European Legal Network, which Simon and I are both involved with, has been working for quite a long time on a paper on app stores and the legal issues that it hasn't sort of finished, and we're trying to get it finished, hopefully by the conference in April, I think. Mm-hmm. If anybody in this room wants to carry on the discussion or ask more questions or contribute thoughts to that paper, we didn't do slides. I guess my email's all over the internet. Everybody knows Simon, but if anybody wants contact details for me, I'm happy to bring you into that conversation and to get your views included in it. We would like to have a vote, if that's okay with everyone, to see whether you think we should or shouldn't be contributing. Simon, do you want to do that?
Okay, so if you believe that it is important that we should be contributing free software into app stores in the abstract context, do please raise a hand to indicate that you believe we should be putting software into app stores. Thank you very much. If you believe that it is inappropriate for us to prioritise putting software into app stores, please would you raise a hand?
Few brave souls.
Okay. So you're the people we want on the group working on the white paper we're doing about app stores, because the input that makes you not happy, we could probably gain visibility for this white paper with some of the legal teams that are writing App Store terms.
And as a lawyer, thank you all very much for coming to this session, but the whole thing has been so well attended today. It's brilliant to see you guys taking on those issues and telling us where we're going wrong. So thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay, Bradley, go ahead.
Do you see what I was talking about, though? do you see what's happening here? So we start out with this complete miss. So those of you, so the nice thing about our listeners, we have recordings of both these things. So you've already heard the panel I was on, I'm being quoted from.
So what did you say exactly? Because I didn't go back and listen to the panel again.
Because you were moderating it.
Yeah, no, I was moderating, but what I'm saying is that when I heard this, because I wasn't in the room either for this talk, and so when I heard her say that, I didn't go back and play the panel again to hear what you actually said. What did you actually say?
What I said is...
Verbatim, do you know?
What I always say, and I've said it on this show before, which is as follows. An unenforced copyleft is the moral equivalent of a permissive license.
Yeah, I think that is what you said.
Right. And yeah. She said that I said, her quote of me was, if you don't enforce copyleft, you automatically grant a permissive license.
Right. Well, that's not right. I mean, you know, there's some truth to that statement. Because
no, it's not. There's no truth whatsoever.
If you never intend to enforce on a copyleft licensed piece of software, then it's, you know, it's as if you would license under a permissive license.
But that's a moral equivalent. It doesn't mean that suddenly someone can unilaterally decide that they have a permissive license, or that some lawyer who has her own agenda can go and tell everybody that you have a permissive license. Not this lawyer next to.
Yeah. Though it's confusing.
Ms. Amanda Brock, who claims that not enforcing copyleft is an affirmative action to give a permissive license. And the fact that she said that is so, basically it's an attack on copyleft. She's making a bold-faced attack on copyleft.
I mean, I don't know. I think that might be an exaggeration of what she was saying.
Our listeners can enjoy. And listen to my...
I think that it's true. If you state that if you go out there and you say, I license this under the GPL, you know, V2, V3, whatever, and I never intend to enforce.
But that's not what she wasn't talking about that situation. She's talking about the situation where somebody uploads it to an app store and doesn't plan to enforce the copyleft for users of that app store.
Yeah, I mean, I worry that if you upload it to an app store and the terms of the app store are such that you say that you won't be enforcing, then it's sort of, you know, equivalent. But
she was talking about the situation where there are multiple copyright holders, which means you can't even do that anyway.
Right. Her
point was basically that the other copyright holders who didn't upload it somehow granted a permissive license because they didn't care.
Right.
Or didn't know about it. Because you don't... in Amanda Brock's world, if you don't know that someone's violating your copyright, you automatically grant a permissive... Isn't that magical? You automatically... If I don't know about a GPL violation, I've given that person a permissive license because I didn't know about it. I think we should ask the MPAA. It would be interesting if she went and tried to pitch this to the MPAA that every time you make a copy of one of the MPAA movies and they don't know about it, it's not copyright infringement anymore. It's just not copyright infringement.
They'd love that.
I'm sure the MPAA would support Amanda Brock's position. I would like her to go to one of their conferences and say that and see what happens.
Yeah.
So that was only the first 30 seconds of the talk. There was a whole hour.
Okay.
It was in the first minute.
It was early. Sure.
And the other thing she said early was this. I mean, one of the things that I was really disheartened that Amanda, at the very beginning of her talk, started talking as if people who weren't lawyers in the room wouldn't know some of the most basic concepts about legal issues.
I thought she was saying that they obviously did know.
She was saying it the other way around. Okay, maybe I misheard.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I just assumed she was saying that because non-lawyers are so knowledgeable in free software.
No, I think she was saying the opposite thing. But since we heard that differently, then one of us might be wrong. So I'm not going to talk about that point because if I misheard it, I don't want to go and complain about that one.
It could easily be my mishearing.
It could have been either of us. So now I have to... I will not rant about because I could be wrong.
Okay.
I would rant about it if I know I was right, but I'm not sure now.
Okay.
Because if you didn't hear it the same way, we heard X and not X, so...
Yeah.
So the listeners can decide. Okay.
In this instance, I think you tend to be right. Well, but I fine. Don't know.
I took a note like, about it. That's why I kind of believe
okay,
it.
Okay, I don't know.
But anyway, I will leave that alone because okay. I could be wrong.
Okay.
We're not going to go back and I'm not going to go back and listen to it the second time. I do not want never want to hear that talk again. I'm sorry. I'm not even going to listen to it when I do the show notes. You will hear. I will never hear that again. But anyway, my next point on it was I was really, really, the thing that probably upset me more than, I mean, the one thing was a misquote, whatever, but both Simon and Amanda didn't really seem to take the freedom to modify as that important. Amanda made this point that if you download something from the App Store and you want to modify it, well, you could just go back. It doesn't matter. You can't install your own version on your own device. You could just beg the App Store to let you upload a different version. Then somebody in the audience points out they don't let you upload alternate versions of things they already have. And said, oh, well, you just give the patch to the upstream developers. As if the upstream developers are automatically going to take it anyway.
Yeah.
Like it shows such a lack of knowledge about how free software projects work in the first place. Because getting patches upstream were not easy.
It was actually an audience member that said, "Well, what about the freedom to modify?" Or was that wasn't right, you because you weren't in the room?
No, it was an audience member. But the point was,
it was somebody in the room.
But the way it went back and forth was
fundamental to software freedom is the ability to modify.
Right, and the fact that it had to be pointed out was upsetting in the first place. The fact that Amanda's answer was upload your own, and the fact that she had to be told that you can't do that in these app stores. Then the fact that she said once being told that what you should do is just get your patch merged upstream just shows a complete disrespect and or misunderstanding and or both of the freedom to modify.
Who was speaking on behalf of VLC? Because I think I was
that was Jean Baptiste. Right, it sounded Baptiste. Like his voice anyway.
I think it was too, and I just wanted to point that out for our listeners because he was very knowledgeable, of course, and had a lot of really
and he and I have had our disagreements about App Store issues, but my disagreements with him are at a completely different level. Like I'm not outraged at what Jean Baptiste believes about App Stores. Jean Baptiste and I disagree about various different points about what the App Stores allow and so forth, but we're at this nuanced level of detail of disagreeing about, oh, he thinks the Google terms say this, I think they say this, and we're arguing about 20 words in the Google App Store agreement. Mm-hmm. So it's a very fine-grained disagreement. My disagreement with Amanda and Simon here is on a whole different level because they're basically saying, throw the freedom to modify out the window. And Jean Baptiste was standing up for the freedom to modify.
Oh,
I thought he was really pushing back on that people need the right to install their own modified version of VLC or anything else.
Spent a lot
device.
Of time clarifying what the terms actually were.
Yeah, although some of those points I disagree with him, but I've talked about that in other. I was on Linux Outlaws talking about that.
Right.
I wrote a blog post, so I'm not going to go into detail about where. But there are nuanced points that I disagree with Jean Baptiste on. It's not like I have a fundamental disagreement with his philosophy on free software and app stores. It's more of a we disagree on a couple of small, minor points about these licenses.
I think Simon really just wanted to get the one point. I think he had one main point to get across, which was that he thought that it's very important for free software to be included in proprietary app stores. And, I don't see that anywhere in your notes because I'm looking over your shoulder at what you want to say.
That.
And that, I think, was his top-level point that he wanted to convey. And I think there's really a lot of there's a lot of weight to that.
But the things he wanted to give up for it, that give up the freedom to modify and completely, just to introduce new users to using free software.
But I think there's some merit to that, because if we're in a situation where we can't reach new people because app stores are the primary way that people receive software, then we have a real problem. I mean, this is why our podcast, Oddcast, is available on iTunes.
I didn't make it available on iTunes.
No, that's true. I didn't make it available on iTunes either. A fan made it available
on
iTunes.
Fans can do what they want to do with the data as long as
they
have a license.
But there are people who wind up, who will wind up getting introduced to.
But we don't have the Oddcast available in formats that can only be played with proprietary software.
Right.
I mean, we made that decision. MP3 is patent encumbered, but there's free software implementations, and in countries that don't have patent encumbrances, it's free software.
But I think that by segregating ourselves, if we refuse to be, I mean, okay, my attitude is let's work with the app stores to try to get them to, to adopt better terms, A. B, let's propose alternatives.
And I'm a big supporter of FDroid, and I think
yeah.
the fact
totally.
that was not mentioned except as an afterthought because Gnutu was in the room, I think, mm-hmm. I think that was him, actually mentioned it. It was the fact that wasn't the focus of we need to create our own alternative app stores, which in Android, you can just get people to add one URL and they can get access to those app stores. It's not hard. So I think that that was the fact that that wasn't the focus didn't make this a very free software kind of focused talk. And I think that's my trouble with Simon's position is that he's willing to give up too much just to have the be deigned to be allowed to offer your software to someone. The fact that we're letting these gatekeepers control us in this way, control our community in this way, is something we have to stand up against.
Well, I agree with that, but I think that if it goes down the road that he's envisioning, which is the, you know, the increase of, you know, the use of app stores,
it's not free software. Yeah. So you can take a permissively licensed program, you can proprietarize it. We've always known that. That's how I first experienced X Windows. I didn't experience a free software version of X Windows. I experienced a proprietary fork made by DeckStation, made by DEC. For deck stations. So it's the same thing here. It's that, oh, great. So the permissively licensed stuff can go into the app stores. It'll be proprietarized. You won't have the freedom to modify. And somehow that's good for us. I mean, it's really a permissive license popularity argument. And I know that's where Simon falls. I know he's not the biggest fan of copyleft in most cases. And so he's really just making an argument of we need to make our software popular, even if the proprietary versions of our software.
I'm just so torn about it because there are the people using app stores are people who will never hear of free and open source software otherwise potentially. You know, like I, you know, when my, you know.
They're not going to hear of it if they, what they get is proprietary,
but when
right?
People I know.
People heard of X, but they're using proprietary.
Download apps and there's a note in there that says this is licensed, you know, under a copyleft license. You can go to this website and download a copy of the source code, you know, a notice along with the app.
And when you get that source code, you can't do anything with it because you don't have the freedom to install a modified version. That's what it basically also says, and so people get this frustration.
No, that's actually not what I'm saying. I'm saying
that's what will happen. That's what will happen right now.
If you want to use these proprietary app stores in order to, you know, distribute your free and open source software, you can put in notices that say this is distributed as free and open source software. You know, you can download a new copy of it on this website.
But you can't install it on your device.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's my problem. My problem is that we shouldn't deal with any app stores that don't allow installing modified versions. Right. We should just reject them entirely.
Right. I guess you can install it, but you have to go through a rigmarole that person's not going to know how to do it.
Right, right.
You're right.
There are Android phones where you can do this. The ones Google ships are good. Google gave us, Bo, I think you got one too, the Nexus One. When I got the Nexus One, mm-hmm. I clicked a single box saying, if you agree to void your warranty, you can do whatever you want with this phone. I clicked OK, and I can install anything I want right over the USB cable. I've never tried to install over the air. I assume I could, but basically I can install anything I want, any way I want, on that phone. And that's because Google allowed me to do that, and they could have restricted me, and they could have used all sorts of legal and technological restrictions to restrict me. And many of the Android vendors do, and all of the other vendors, the Apple phone people and other types of phones that aren't Android and Apple are all that way. They're locked down.
No, that's true.
And if they're locked down, then we don't want anything to do with them.
And that's why you and I run old phones.
I mean, the Replicon project's keeping up, I think, with what phones can you can install your own firmwares on. And so there are phones out there you can use. The point is that I don't think we should let these people be the gatekeepers. There's no reason we should do that. There's no reason we should just give in. I agree negotiating is always useful.
Yeah. Well, so that's my position.
We should keep negotiating, but in the meantime, we should withhold our software from them.
I would say that...
Boycott them until they do the right thing.
I would say that the times that I reached out to Apple, I've got the most mysterious or non-existent responses. So
and the thing that Jean-Baptiste said, which I do agree with him this on, is Microsoft is the most friendly because they're the trailer in the market. And so now they're suddenly friendly to GPL applications and other such things they used to not be friendly to because they're a distant third in the market for phone software. So it's an interesting thing that happens. But on the other hand, the leaders are not there. The 99% of the phones out there and smart devices and tablets and all that you can't actually install free software on them. And that's really bad.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't work with anybody who won't let us install free software, meaning free software, with the right, the freedom to copy, share, modify, and redistribute the software.
Yeah, I guess there's there's just a tension. Like, I'm just a little torn. I don't know where the line is, honestly, for me personally. Like, I don't know where the line is of advocacy versus, you know, like, telling people who are basically the people who are using those app stores are never going to encounter free and open source software any other way.
So
that's, I mean, they're already,
we're about to enter the dark ages,
locked down.
So we just have to live with it.
So and by including some software in proprietary app stores that has an advocacy component where it says it doesn't have to
so
be this
I'm
way.
All for a little app that will write one proprietary app, which is it installs on your phone and it just plays, this phone is locked down and won't give you freedom over and over again. I'm for writing that proprietary app and we'll name it, we'll like sneak it in and name it other things so that people get like have like recorded messages of,
sort of like,
why the phone hates your freedom.
Like, wasn't that an RIA strategy at one point? They
yes,
like seeded Napster with MP3s that were entitled popular songs but
yes.
were instead recordings of.
Correct.
Right.
I would be all for that strategy.
Saying, this is stolen.
We would say, your phone won't give you freedom. You can't have, like the VLC guys, I wish they would get together and they'd give a fake VLC that said, you can't get VLC because this app store refuses to do this. And like change it up.
The problem with that is that, right, I was going to say, the problem with that is it's so short-lived. It's not effective.
But keep doing it over and over again. Lots of people should do this.
Yeah,
lots of people should sign up.
But then no one will ever choose. I mean,
well, but the thing is, we should monkey with these app store systems because these gatekeepers shouldn't exist, and we should monkey with them. We should mess with them.
We should just support alternatives.
And that too. We should do both at once.
And not give up negotiating for better terms.
I think we need to do all these strategies at once.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But I think for the moment, the idea, I just find it completely. Antithetical to the advancement of free software to say, let's everybody give up the freedom to modify. Don't let anybody worry about the freedom to modify until we get into the hands of users. That's
I agree.
That's a popularity
that.
Argument, and I'm not for popularity arguments.
All right, so what's your next point?
My only other point was that they invited us, they invited everybody who heard the talk to a network that you won't be allowed on, so don't bother.
Well, maybe you'll be allowed on it.
I'm not allowed on it.
I didn't say you. Yeah. I meant you, meaning our listener.
Maybe. I mean, actually, it might be interesting if they all applied. I mean, I obviously, Amanda, you should write to Amanda and say, you invited me to ELN, I want to join.
Amanda's not the one who runs the ELN.
Well, she made it sound like they were all invited.
Yeah, actually, maybe all of our listeners should
write to Amanda Brock and
should ask to be, well, maybe not Amanda, but to the ELN list and say,
right, and CC
and say
Amanda.
Amanda Brock invited me to
yes,
be.
Yes, that's a great idea. That's actually a great idea.
And
that's a wonderful idea.
And CC us. Or no, CC Bradley.
Don't
CC me
either. Just do it if you would like to. I don't know if there's real value there for our listeners, but it sounds like everybody's invited. I mean. I've commented on this issue before. I'm going to leave that alone for the moment. But, yeah. So that was.
I think given those high level comments, I don't know that we have to anything more to.
Yeah, I don't have anything more to say really. I mean, I was very disappointed. Not so much in Amanda because I know where she stands. I know she's not a free software person, but. Simon talks about software freedom a lot, and I was upset, unhappy with Simon. That he was willing to throw away the freedom to modify. And I understand why he's doing it. I just think it's a mistake.
Right.
He also told me recently that I shouldn't say I'm using OpenOffice even if I am.
Why?
Because OpenOffice is so horrible. The actions of IBM and Oracle were so horrible with regard to OpenOffice that even if I had to use OpenOffice,
why are you using OpenOffice?
We used OpenOffice at Conservancy because its release had a feature that LibreOffice didn't.
Oh.
But LibreOffice was integrating it, and it was in upstream, but you had to build from source, and we didn't have time.
Okay.
You had to build not just from source, but you had to build from, like, upstream, like, the checkout, the repository, and build from source kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with scaling SVGs, and so we used OpenOffice. And we said we did, because that's what we did.
Yeah.
And it's free software. It's not
and
like
he
it's...
he says not to...
Yeah, he said we shouldn't tell people. We should not say that. Tell people that we used it.
Why?
Because I told you the reason.
To not promote them?
Yeah, even if it's the truth. And so you should avoid saying it.
Well, that kind of like segues into the next talk.
It could. But the reason I bring that up is because...
Trademarks.
No, I just wanted to say putting software in the hands of users. And that you should give up things to get that done. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. I think those two things are strange positions to have both of. Anyway, so that's the story. I'm not happy with this talk, but I want our listeners to hear it because I think the audience interaction was valuable because the audience really questioned a lot of the things that were being said by the speakers, and that was valuable.
Yeah, the audience was really aggressive.
It was good.
It was great.
They needed to be. I was glad that that happened. But
were you glad that you weren't in the room?
Yeah, it was probably better that I wasn't in the room. So yeah,
it might be worthwhile to do an interview with Simon on just that one narrow point.
Yeah.
Okay.
We know what he thinks.
Okay.
So
I don't know.
I don't agree with it.
I'd be interested to hear more.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
you maybe can, if I see Simon at a.
You can ask him. And you can report back.
I'll bring a microphone.
Or you can just ask him to report back.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe so, I can record. Maybe I can. I'll have him write it down, and then I can read it out loud in an English accent.
I don't know about that.
I'm just kidding.
Anyway, so I think that I've ranted enough about my frustrations with this talk, and I think
we just the later talks
will be better.
That's it.
Okay. So we'll join you next time for.
You'll join us next time.
Yeah, we'll join them.
Everyone.
It's like a join. It's like, you know, when you have a thread and you do a join and then you wait for the other side. We're waiting for the other side to join us.
So we wait. Freeze and Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of Pod Factory and can be found at podfactory.org. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This episode of Freeze and Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. You can follow Freeze and Freedom, Bradley, and Karen on Identica, and also read Bradley's and Karen's blogs. Links can be found on the Freeze and Freedom website, faif.us. That's FAIF.us.
So now it's test recording.
Okay. Testing.
You have to say more than that. Like especially what? We've never used this before.
I know. But, well, we did use it in FOSDEM.
Yeah, but we never used it in this room, in this situation, in this place,
but this is so much more ideal than that was.
What? Who? Where?
This is so much better than that was.
I guess. You're not talking to it.
Do I have to?
I don't know.